Dead Ringers.
You're listening to Today, where the time is 24 hours from Tulsa. We're just seconds now from finally receiving the results of the chaotic contest that has already dominated front pages worldwide. Sue.
John, I think we do have a result, yes. Westlife have beaten the Spice Girls to number one.
Well, we're joined by Robin Cook. What's your reaction, Mr. Cook?
Business will.
So you say you can do business with Westlife. This despite the fact that you preempted the result by wearing a Spice Girls Rule t-shirt in the Commons and shouting girl power at a recent European conference.
John, it seems we may not have a victor after all. Incredibly, the Spice Girls are demanding a recount.
I don't know if you can do that. Congratulations.
Well, I think we had a retraction there from Mr. Cook, but let's face it, we may never know for sure.
We can now take you exclusively to the beginning of the manual recount, which is thought to be much more accurate.
All right, Victoria, I'll start the count. 1, 2, 5.
Lordy, lordy. We can cross now to Washington for reaction to the crisis from President Clinton.
Well, John, I gotta say, I'm completely neutral on this one here. On the one hand, the Spice Girls are girls, which I like. But shucks, let's face it, Westlife sure are prettier.
Well, as this epic contest seems likely to be settled in the court's super sale, will it undermine forever the faith we all have in the pop system?
Personally, I like Steps.
BBC Radio 4. I'm Charlotte Green. Radio 4 and me sitting in a tree, K-I-S-S-I-N-G. And with the success of The Weakest Link, BBC bosses plan to use host Anne Robinson in other flagship shows.
Hello. And welcome to Animal Hospital and me lovely new co-host.
Yes, thank you, Rolf. Now, last night, the vets here were only able to keep a feeble 6 pets on life support. Who's holding our vets back? Who's more trouble than they're worth? It's time to vote off the weakest pet.
Hey, you know, steady on there, Anne.
Mr. Griffiths, you voted for the Johnson's pet, Roger. Why?
Well, he is only a terrapin. He's very easy to replace.
But your dog Trevor hasn't been much use to anyone lately, has he? Hasn't banked any bones for weeks.
I think what Anne's trying to say is that the poor little fellow's been tuckered out. He's been very weak at the moment, but all the vets here will try everything they can do to make him pull through.
No, no, I'm not. I'm saying he's a useless, fat, wobbly, arthritic dog. But it's votes that count. Roger the Terrapin, you are the weakest pet. Goodbye.
Anne, I don't think we're supposed to execute the animals.
The rest of you continue to get treatment for your pets, Mr. Johnson. You leave with nothing except this unrecognisable, gory corpse.
Can you tell what it is yet?
Hello, welcome to Crime Watch UK. I'm Nick Ross. If I were a city, I'd be Milton Keynes. Were you in the Oxford area on Wednesday night? Perhaps you heard this.
Thank Lewis for me.
Tonight we ask, who killed Inspector Morse? Private Investigator Hetty Wainthrop.
Well, you only have to look at Morse's lifestyle, Nick. Quite frankly, louche is the only word to describe it. He strikes me as the type of man a little too liberal with the rose-scented toilet duck, if you get my drift. Swigging back real ale, driving his Jag everywhere. Of course it was a coronary, or I'm not Hyacinth Bouquet with a different hat on.
So, were you in the area? Did you see a man running from the scene carrying a blood-stained word processor? Perhaps he was a writer. A writer completely sick of doing the same Oxford-based murder mystery for the past 30 years.
BBC Radio 4. I'm Brian Perkins. What's up? Following the recent diamond raid on the Millennium Dome, police say they were acting on intelligence received. They were. I grassed them up. I won't have the biggest snatch in history taking place under my nose. Not unless you count Libby Purvis. So, if you fancy yourself a piece of the action, then I'm telling you now. If you don't want things to get uglier than Frank and Pat having sex on EastEnders, I suggest you cut Big Daddy Perkins in on your deals.
True.
My next guest is a particular favourite of mine, but then isn't everyone. He's the actor and professional egghead, Ross Kemp.
All right.
Now, Ross... Ross, your next major film has just been released. Now, is it perhaps a role too far?
What you're forgetting there, Michael, is that I'm Ross Kemp, Britain's and now the world's most versatile actor. I played a bald, angry thug in EastEnders, then I moved to ITV where I played a bald, angry security guard, and then a bald, angry policeman. Harry Potter was the next logical step.
Right, well, let's have a clip.
Soon, I, Lord Voldemort, will have the Philosopher's Stone. And with it, all magic shall be mine, and I shall rule the world!
Shut it, you wizard slag! Your evil plans will never come to fruition, or my name's not youthful teenage magician Harry Potter. Get down in castle stairs!
Dead ringers.
I think you're trying to seduce me, Mrs. Robinson.
No, that's the wrong answer, you pathetic little virgin, Benjamin. You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
As captain of the Starship Enterprise, I welcome you all to this charity auction. It's my job to make it so. First lot is a Jedi lightsaber from the film The Phantom Menace, kindly donated by Liam Neeson, who is going to start the bidding.
I bid 20 quid.
I'm bid 20 from the asthmatic in the black crash helmet. With the army of stormtroopers. Anyone else?
I will bid £30.
£30 I have from the wizened old man in the brown cloak, who I should remind was asked to leave his Wookiee outside. Any others?
£31. Obi-Wan, I am the master at auctions now.
If you just offer more money than me, my bid will grow more powerful than you can possibly imagine. £200.
Any advance on £200? No? Sold at a ridiculously high price? Next lot, donated by the BBC, this lovely handheld sonic screwdriver.
Yes! Do you take Alpha Centauri Express,
Good morning, White House Mail. Actually, Miss Dickens. May I help you?
Hello, the White House.
This is the White House.
Oh, good morning. It's William Hague, the leader of the Conservative Party in Great Britain.
Mm-hmm.
I just wondered, with all of the uncertainty over the presidential elections at the moment, if you don't mind, do you want me to be the president?
I think we can do just fine without one.
Honestly, I don't mind, you know, just for a while you get things sorted out, I don't mind being the president. Just while you sort things out.
Just while we're sorting things out?
Well, exactly. You know, I would be quite happy. I mean, I could maintain my duties with the Conservative Party in Great Britain and be the president of the United States as well.
That's really cute.
As part of my extensive studies of the United States, I've put together a cabinet of people who I think would be marvellous to rule the United States with me.
Oh, really?
I think for foreign policy, I would appoint Big Bird from Sesame Street.
Big Bird?
Uh-huh.
And who else?
Well, I would say the Minister for Education, Grover.
Would you like to say the alphabet with me?
Sorry.
Okay, sir, hold on.
So when shall I begin?
If you would like to leave a message or express an opinion, please press 1 now.
Hello, this is William Hague from the Conservative Party in Great Britain. I've just been having a word with the lady on the switchboard. I'm the president now, so any problems, just call Fionn, apart from on a Thursday night when she's at bingo. Bye.
Oh, Eddie! After us losing the farm and all the cows having to be slaughtered and Joe having to go to hospital and you killing all your ferrets and us ending up in that caravan and William being arrested for touching up Britney Spears in the Met bar.
Yeah, it's been a quiet year, hasn't it?
Shut up, Eddie. But here we are about to move into our lovely new home in Keeper's Cottage. I think our luck's finally turned for the better.
Hello, I'm Carol Smiley. The woman with more teeth than a bag full of pianos. And welcome to changing rooms.
Oh, no, Clary, she's brought Linda Barker with her.
Well, what we've done is we've covered the walls and floors of your cottage with a lovely gasoline motif, which I think is really, really nice. And what we're going to do is take a burning rag, apply it to the gasoline, creating a lovely sort of flame pattern. So eventually, this is going to give a lovely burnt-to-the-ground charcoal effect to the whole house, which I, in my tyrannical middle-class way, think is really, really nice.
Eddie, look what they've done. They've reduced our beautiful cottage to a smouldering, burnt-out wreck.
Great, right. Now, Grandies, come and have a look at what Lawrence Llewellyn Bowen's done to your barn.
Ah, felicitations, one and all. And as the heavens open and the floodwaters rise around my learned ankles, it's time for me, Robert Robinson, to welcome you to Reign of Britain. And the first question goes to Mr. Parkinson. Prithee, sire, how high your floodwater?
Now, when it comes to floodwater, I'm reminded of something the great Muhammad Ali once said to me. He, of course, used to float like a butterfly, while I'm floating like a slightly crumpled chat show host in a rubber dinghy.
Oh, dear. Blither, splish, bother, splash. And now on to you, Mr. Harris.
No, good day. Well, it's bad news for old Rolfie. The flood waters, which is too high. Me flood defences were just too weak, and me sandbags just slipped away into the night. No, dear, it's all very sad.
Ah, well, you've both performed admirably. So, until the next slight drizzle brings the country to a grinding halt, I bid you fond adieu. Gurgle, gurgle, blither, blather, sink.
And now, to accompany Simon Sharma's BBC series, we present History of Britain with Simon Bates.
Okay, so there was a queen, let's call her Elizabeth the First. Good Queen Bess to her friends, and I guess you could say by the 20th year of her reign, Elizabeth was beginning to feel that she might never find a man. But then she met Philip. Philip was everything Elizabeth could have wanted in a man. He was handsome, charming, King of Spain. Elizabeth thought, yeah, maybe this could be the one. But let's just say that then Philip launched an armada with the sole aim of trying to overthrow Elizabeth. And she felt hurt. And I guess betrayed. But then when she went into work the next morning at the court, the Earl of Leicester asked her, look, Bess, what's wrong? Well, Earl, she said, I'm feeling a bit gutted. And I've decided I'm going to remain a virgin for the rest of my life. And that's what she did, and then she listened to a U2 record and everything was fine. Next week I'll tell you the tragic story of the aging disc jockey who was fired from Radio 1 and now ekes out a living on local radio. Good night.
New from BBC Enterprises, a tape all news fans can treasure forever. It's a trip down memory lane.
Good evening. This is the 9 o'clock news from the BBC.
Michael Burke says this is the 9 o'clock news. Yes, all the times Michael Burke said this is the 9 o'clock news, brought together on one compilation for you to keep. From the unforgettable...
Good evening. This is the 9 o'clock news.
To the tender...
Good evening. This is the 9 o'clock news.
To the unforgettably bombastic...
Good evening. This is the 9 o'clock news.
The perfect gift for viewers who'd rather watch the news at 9 o'clock instead of shows about animals and wallpaper. And coming soon, a companion tape.
Good evening. This is the midnight news.
Which will be released when Greg Dyke moves the news to midnight to make way for celebrity ground force changing hospitals in practice with Rolf Harris and Charlie Dimmock.
Hello?
Yeah, hello?
Hello.
Is that the Royal Ballet?
Yes, it is.
Hello, my name's...
It's the Royal Ballet School, not the Royal Ballet
yeah.
Company.
My name's Craig Phillips, and you might remember me from when I won Big Brother.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Well, you know, obviously, you know, the show's done now and that, and I want to move forward and, you know, I've recorded my Christmas single and stuff, but it's not really intellectually stimulating for me, you know. So I wondered what would I have to do to, like, go about joining, you know, the Royal Ballet School and being taken on and that.
Are you under 18?
Yeah, I mean, you know, since I worked out, I'm about, you know, 14 stone, I suppose. But, so I'm chunky, but...
No, no, what I meant is, are you 18 years of age?
Yeah, I was, yeah, yeah.
You
definitely.
Were, but
yeah,
not
yeah.
now.
What do you sort of look for, you know, in a ballet dancer sort of thing?
Well, the thing is, you have to be between 16 and 18.
Is there just a form? Well, you just filled a form in and
no,
sent
no,
off?
You have to come for an audition.
Oh, great, great.
But how old are you?
Because I just feel that I know I could do it.
You're not answering my question. How old are you?
Because I used to be a work on the building site and that. What? Well, how old am I? Well, yeah, I'm just 18.
What year were you born in?
My first one.
Yeah, I know. I think you better go to some other college and ask them, because you're too old for this one.
I just want to be like ballerina Barbie, you know, that's what I feel
yeah.
my destiny is.
I'm sure you do.
I just want to put a pink frilly dress on and jump about in that. You know, put some grapefruits down my underpants.
And the time is just coming up to 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie to 7. This week, the government has launched a new offensive on the euro. John Prescott, you've had trouble getting your message across.
Well, John, as a matter of fact, and in so much as it was, and taking 6 to 1 and half a dozen of the other, the government stance vis-a-vis the single currency, and I think you'll find I agree with myself on this. And such as it was, and such as it will be, and I, that is me, as in me, myself, and I, and Brussels, such as it is, can say with authority that the government is that.
Thank you, Mr. Prescott. Witty, erudite and concise are 3 words he once looked up in the dictionary. Sue.
Yes, well, it's lucky we're also joined by another cabinet minister who we hope can explain the government's euro position more clearly. I'm going to have to stop you there, as we have no news of exactly when that sentence will end.
Oh, lordy, lordy. Ah, Mr. Mandelson has just arrived. Well, you've been making your position very clear, Peter.
Well, John, we're always keen to be very, very clear on the issue of the euro. Smooth talking, seeming to make sense, gentle, reasonable, really quite clear. Avocados, Moussa coffee, French bread dipped in Greek, extra, extra virgin olive oil. Warm, soothing and reassuring.
Right. Well, that's a minute of my life I'll never have again. That should be the end of mindless ramblings for one morning.
Coming up next, Thought for the Day.
I'm beginning to envy Inspector Morse.
Oh, Alec. Alec, we mustn't.
Why not, Laura? Why ever not?
We can't carry on like this. I must go. Get on the train and just go.
You can't, Laura.
Why ever not?
The train's been delayed. For 4 hours. Apparently it's the wrong kind of leaves on the track.
Damn the leaves. Damn the leaves.
There's flooding as well, Laura.
Damn the flooding. Damn the flooding.
If only they could, Laura. Look, Laura, let's ask that chubby porter over there for help. He's bound to know what's going on.
Chappie, I say, what time's the next train due in?
Well, as the Prime Minister said, the current delays are simply the result of what, when, how, and also, and if I can keep talking in a confusing way without taking a breath...
This is Trevor McDonald, reporting live on the presidential election debacle. I'm here with angry local residents outside Disney World in Florida.
Trevor, I tried to vote for Gore. But as I've only got 3 fingers on each hand, and I always wear big white gloves, I'm a bit clumsy. Isn't that right, Pluto?
And I voted for George W. Bush.
Because, Mr. Goofy, you were baffled by the complex voting card?
No, because I'm an idiot.
Yes, you truly are Goofy. And you, Donald? I've no idea what he said, but he still makes more sense than Robin Cook. Goodbye now.
Dead Ringers.
I was sharing a pot of Earl Grey with Thora Heard just the other day. After the annual college fete... when a man came on the wireless talking about irregularities in the American elections. Thora opened her mouth in disbelief, inadvertently dropping a Chelsea bun onto my Afghan rug. In my day, we knew how to stick up an American election, she opined. I nodded in acquiescence, and my mind meandered back to a warm July evening in 1960, when a certain Senator Kennedy... made a deal to buy the US election with the sinister head of the Chicago mob, Thora the Stairlift Heard. Nights of stolen passion and milky Ovaltine ensued, culminating with a husky-voiced Thora memorably serenading Kennedy with Happy Birthday, Mr. President on TV and being photographed with a dress blowing up around her waist, showing off her Marks and Spencer's reinforced gusset. But she was to fall out with the president, and they became bitter enemies. Which is why, on a warm November afternoon, Thora, myself, Peter Salis, and Mr. Pettiforth from Number 42 found ourselves in Dallas, crouching by a grassy knoll, waiting for a certain cavalcade to drive past. So... as I look across at Thora, reloading her .22 rifle, I say to whoever eventually becomes president, you'd better hot-foot it to Yorkshire to bend down and kiss Thora's ring, or we'll be having another election quicker than you can say Lee Harvey Oswald. But of course, they won't, will they?
Hello, I'm Melvin Bragg, and welcome to In My Own Time and Nobody Try to Rush Me. In a month that sees the killing of Inspector Morse and Victor Meldrew, we ask whether curmudgeonly personalities are being bumped off to boost ratings. To discuss the matter are aging sex symbols Jermaine Greer and Des Lynam. Jermaine.
Don't patronise me, Melvin. You're just jealous because I've got bigger hair than you.
Des.
Nice.
I think the extinction of Morse represents the modern British male penis. I mean, it is grey, castrated and driving a Jag.
Jermaine, look out for that loose electrical cable. Jermaine Greer has been fatally electrocuted. Well, moving on to you, Des Lynam.
Nice. Velvet. Milk chocolate. Join me later. Me give you good loving.
Des Lynam's just been killed by a falling anvil. Now me blowing my nose. Hang on, what's this in my handkerchief? It appears to be an explosive device.
That was Melvin Bragg there, getting whacked. They better not try to kill me off, or I'll sort them. I'll post the bits back to their families. It was me that did over Huey Green that time in the LWT car park. You might say opportunity knocked, but not half as hard as his head did against my Dr. Martins. Or as I call them, my Doc Perkins. Because they're like Dr. Martins, only harder.
Andrew Samstead.
Hello, is that the DIY store?
It is.
Greetings to you. It is the doctor speaking.
Uh-huh.
Are you well?
Very well, thank you. Are you?
Yes. Tell me, my good man, I just wanted to check certain items that you may have in stock. Do you sell dustbins?
Yes, we do, inside and outside.
I see. Do you sell paint rollers?
Yes, we do.
Egg whisks?
We do.
Do you sell sink plungers?
We do.
Do minis pass by your store, and if so, have you noticed their indicator lights?
Yes.
Well, in that case, you are in mortal danger, my friend.
What's that?
Because my arch-enemy Davros... Have you heard of Davros?
I haven't.
He intends to unleash a psychonic galvanizing beam which will be absorbed by your egg whisk paint rollers, ball cocks for toilet cisterns, sink plungers, mini indicator lights, and they will be summoned into the corporeal existence of the force known as the Daleks.
Oh, very nice.
You are containing the raw materials of Daleks in your store.
We are.
You must take great, great care, my friend.
We will do.
Do you know how you can stop the plan of Davros?
No, we don't.
Well, just keep the door locked and unpack a few hose pipes. He hates the smell of rubber.
All right, then.
All right, my friend.
Cheers.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dead Ringers. It was performed by John Culture, Jan Ravens, Mark Perry and Lewis McLeod. It was written by Neff Fountain and Tom Jameson, Lawrence Howarth, Dan Robbins and Dan Tetzel, John Culture, John Holmes, Dave Cohen and Paul McKenzie, George Holes and Simon Littlefield, and Mike Barfield. The producer was Bill Dare.